इसी मुक्त विराज समय श्री प्रभुपाद की जाओ विष्णुपाद परमहंस श्री बुद्ध कथाय अष्ट थर सत श्री श्रीमान भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती प्रभु महाराज उपहार की अनंत खोरी वैष्णव वृंद की नाम शाय श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की रंज को हो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्री भास्वरी गौर
श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण
गो गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंज वरकुंज गिरि गोवर्धन की
श्री वृंदावन धाम की श्री मथुराम की
गंग जमुन माई की
भक्ति देवी की
तुलसी महारानी की His divine grace is confounded the charya Shri Prabhupada ki Shri Shri Gornithai ki
Shri Sitai Gaura Chandra ki
Jagannath Subhadra Baladev
ki Shri Shri Lakshminar Sindhadev ki Harinam Prabhu ki New Zealand Hariyatra ki
Shri Gopani Mahasava ki All glory to the Sangha devotees All glory to the Sangha devotees All glories to the Sangha devotees.
Glory to Guru and Garanga.
Came back. Hare Krishna. Oh, thank you for coming. So before we begin class this morning, I'd like to give a few gifts to the devotees. Where's Yagya? Oh, there you are. Sit down. He's here. Where's Pallad? I was just thinking in South Africa, I'd like to bring a few gifts
for the devotees.
I was thinking what would be appropriate for someone who had been on padayatra, a padayatri. I was thinking walking all that way, of course you've also been driving, but anyway, walking that distance, I was thinking what would be appropriate. I was thinking maybe something for to soothe the lotus feet. Krishna says, one who says he's my devotee, he's not my devotee. One who's the devotee of my devotee, he's actually my devotee. So the best way to get the mercy of the devotees is to serve them, and the most auspicious part is the lotus feet. So in South Africa, they have a type of shoe which devotees all over the world, they ride in for. I don't know if you've seen them before, maybe you've been in Mayapur, all the big whips have on. GBC's. It's a Shivaram Swami's favorite shoe because it's easy to slip on and off. It looks stylish and there's no leather. And it's more comfortable than Birkenstocks. So every week they get faxes down there. Please, could you send me a pair of shoes? I need these shoes, etc., etc. So I thought that would be an appropriate gift here. So let's see here. We'll start with Mr. Padayatra. I don't know what size shoe you have, I just guess it. What size shoe? What do you have? Oh, a Pallad? Quick, run and get the other pair of shoes. But keep them under your... Pallad, these are size 10. I had an argument with Pallad in Durban. I figured out Collis's size because I looked at his feet before. But you're so fast I could never catch you. And I said, he's a size 8 or 9. He said, no, he's size 10 or 11. He said, he's taller than you, Maharaj. I said, Pallad, are you all right? So, okay, who's got a size 11 here? Collis, you want to? Let's see what it says here, first of all. To Collis from your foot servant, Indraduna Swami. You got off on it up. It's a big surprise was inside. just want to show you one thing first. This is Carlos's foot shoe now. Hare Krishna. You want to stand up and try them on for us? Or? Hey, and that's the right color too, right? Okay. You want to come open your present?
I just got a hole in mine yesterday, man.
Yeah. You like the color of that wrapping?
Can I keep the wrapping?
No, I saw your wife in Christchurch. Forget it. Thank you. Try one. Hey, perfect fit. Hare Krishna. I just want to show you one thing today. Just give it back for a second. No, it's something else. It's not something else. I want to show you the piece on here. You're so gullible. Lotus feet of all the Vaishnavas ki. You can wear them in class because they're fresh, they're new. Keep your feet warm. And we have one other, not this one. We have one other present for someone who really deserves it. This is for Mother Jambavati from Lord Chaitanya. You want to come forward and get it? Lord Chaitanya, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, and Lord Srinidev. Hare Krishna. You have to open it. Drums. Shri Prabhupada's Marathon Ki. He deserves it. Put it on. Don't take it off. I tried that one on you, so. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23. This chapter is entitled Pita Maharaj. Maharaj Pita's going back home. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ativa Bhartur Vrata Dharma Nishtaya Shushrushaya Charsha Deha Yatraya Navin Dhatartim Parikarshitapi Sa Prayashkara Sparshana Mana Nirviti. There's no port. I lost my sight because of the hepatitis. Can't see anymore. Ativa Bhartur Vrata Dharma Nishtaya Shushrushaya Charsha Deha Yatrayaya Navindartatim Parikarshita Piso Prayashkara Sparshana Mana Nirviti. Ativa.
Ativa.
Very much.
Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Although she was not accustomed to such difficulties, Queen Archie followed her husband in the regulative principles of living in the forest like great sages. She lay down on the ground and ate only fruits, flowers, and leaves. And because she was not fit for these activities, she became frail and thin. Yet because of the pleasure she derived in serving her husband, she did not feel any difficulties. This is an interesting verse after yesterday's program. It's called Sweet Revenge. Purport. Love Jimin's the sweet rice. Om Agyan Tamidandasya Ginangina Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sigurdave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishnam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadar Har Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Omam Hrim Shrom Om Parom Tataka Hataka Keshika Dilat Padaka Lojana Bhadraka Naka Sparsadeva Singha Namostate. So in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see the pleasure that Mother Archie is enjoying in serving her good husband, in being dependent upon her husband. The disease of the conditioned soul is that he or she, wants independence from God. In fact, in this material world, everyone wants to be master, and no one wants to be the servant. This is the disease. Prabhupada says in a purport in Bhagavad Gita, no one in this material world wants to glorify Lord Vishnu. Everyone is more inclined to have their own self glorified. So this is the disease of the conditioned soul. In fact, in the scriptures it's stated that the living entity becomes so illusioned by material life that he actually becomes envious of his own self. Now I remember when I first heard this statement in a class, the living entity becomes envious of his own self. What does this mean? How does the living entity become envious of his own self? Well, first of all, this particular English, which Prabhupada used, this is the English which was used by the British many years ago when they were in charge of India. So actually what Prabhupada means by envious of the own, of one's own self is hate. Envious meant hate. They were synonymous in this British language at that particular period. So the living entity actually, he hates his own self. How is that? How could the living entity hate one's own self? Because what is the nature of the self? Jivera Sarupoya Krishnera Nityadas. The actual nature of the self, the eternal constitutional position, the intrinsic quality of the Atma, or the soul, is to be servant of God. So this idea is repugnant to a conditioned soul. To serve God, actually, we have to be very careful when we speak, just like our friend was telling me last night. We have to judge our audience and speak accordingly. So this is good advice. So many times when speaking to an audience, we refrain from saying service to God. Oh, serve God, why should I serve God? Because the disease of the conditioned soul is that he's envious of God. Just like if you go to a revolutionary university, like I remember in the 60s when we were preaching in America, we would go and speak. We had to be very careful not to speak about the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because everyone was against the Vietnam War. And when you go to any place, you have to be... So this is the place where people are forgetful of God. This is the place you come when you're envious of God, the material world. In the spiritual world, everyone is engaged in loving, devotional service. And this material world is called Durgadham. Durga, she's in charge of this material creation, Durgadham, thankless task of keeping the living entities bound up in the meshes of repeated birth and death. So Durgadham is like a prison. So a prison is a place for people with a criminal mentality. So the material world, the criminal mentality is enviousness of God. Therefore, instead of becoming servant in all aspects, We want to become master. We used the example last night of big fish, little fish. So, yeah. Krishna is the big fish, and we are the little fish. But because we have that small amount of independence, we can choose to accept God or to reject God. Love means that we have choice. If God forced us to love Him, that would not be love. Love is something spontaneous. It springs from the heart. So therefore, there is independence. There has to be the choice of not serving God. Otherwise, it wouldn't be perfect. Perfect is we have choice. So some living entities, they misuse that independence. They become envious. Why Krishna has to be master? Why can't I be master? And they forget the supreme bliss of being a servant. And in the absence of serving God, we try to serve so many other things. But that service never brings full satisfaction, unless and until it is also in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because we have a bad taste for service in this material world, we distrust the idea of service to God or His devotees. In other words, we foolishly hate that which is in our actual self-interest. We become envious of our own selves. We hate our own position as actually being servant of God. This is the disease of the conditioned soul. The self's position is to serve, but we think we can become happy by proselytizing philosophies of equality and independence. Just like last night, we heard people were angry. They became angry when we talked about becoming subservient, whether in the position of a man or a woman or whatever the case may be. The very idea of becoming subservient to anyone or anything has a bad taste for the conditioned soul. So therefore we find so many philosophies of independence and equality in Kali Yuga. You look at the whole gamut of Western civilization. It's based on this principle of independence, of freedom for sense gratification. All the independence movements that we find in politics, why are those movements there? Because they're dissatisfied with a particular government in power. They want independence to enjoy sense gratification as they want. Same disease. In France, they have the motto, Ni maître ni Dieu. I heard this so much, especially in the early 70s, when they're having those riots on the street. Ni maître ni Dieu. And we were on the street saying, surrender to God, surrender to God's devotees. You know, the students would come, they'd punch us in the face, spit on us. Envious of their own selves, their nature to serve. Ni maître ni Dieu, no master, no God. Of course, in one sense, it's understandable, because what is the nature of service in this material world? That one becomes exploited, because there's no actual love in this world. Because the tendency is so strong for sense gratification, a person will go to such extremes, even to exploit those whom he loves. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy in this world. Love means selfless. Love can only be there in the spiritual sense of love for God. But in the material world, because everyone is very interested in sense gratification, this exploiting mentality is there. Therefore, in the so-called name of love, people get married, but it's just simply based on sex desire. Because you can satisfy my senses better than somebody else. Let's become partners. And Prabhupada called this legalized prostitution. So that's why, at least in many countries, 3 out of 4 marriages, they end in divorce. This is the facts. The facts speak for themselves. We have the philosophy, but the facts also back up that relationships in the material world are very superficial. Friends become enemies, lovers become divorced, etc. This is the story of material life. So people have a very bad taste of service. They serve their friend, but their friend turns their back on them. They serve their wife, they serve their husband, but then one or the other cheats each other. This is the real story of, you know, we have the story of Romeo and Juliet or something, you know, or the prince and the princess who, you know, went off into the sunset forever after. But if you actually look at the facts of the matter, the relationship of service in this material world, because it's based on sense gratification, is very superficial. So people have a bad taste of service. So then you speak of service to God. Oh, no way. I'm sick of this service. So this is the disease of the conditioned soul. He becomes envious or hateful of his own eternal nature of that as a servant. There's a nice story which Prabhupada related one time. He said once there was a lion, and this lion was coming to the village every day and eating so many people. So the people made a deal with the lion. All right, you're coming and eating so many people, you're taking three or four, more than your quota. We'll send one person or one animal to you every day, and you'd be satisfied with that, okay? Just go live in the forest, and every day we'll send one living entity that you can eat every day. So the lion agreed, all right, it's easy for me, I'll just sit in one place when they send that person. So every day, the village would send some human being or some goat or something like that, and the lion would have his share. So one day it came turn for the rabbits. So the rabbits selected one of their kind to go and be eaten by this lion. So before the rabbit, everyone had gone very dutifully. Oh yes, okay, gobble, gobble, eat him up. But this rabbit was a little intelligent. So as each time one of these creatures went to see the lion, they had to take a big plate of food with them. So the lion would eat the food, and he would also eat the person who brought the food. So this rabbit was a little intelligent. He went very slowly. In fact, he sat down on a rock and he waited about 5 or 6 hours. Actually, he fell asleep. And then finally, when he showed up, the lion was just ferocious. Roar! Where have you been? You're 6 hours late. So the rabbit said, the rabbit had left the food plate that he was bringing back on the rock near a well. So he said, my dear Lord, he said, you wouldn't understand, but there's another lion in this forest, and he's bigger than you. And on the way out here, he ate the offering that I was bringing to you. He was just making up this story, of course. So the lion said, yeah, there's another lion in the forest, and he ate the food that was supposed to be for me. Where is he? So this very intelligent rabbit, he took this lion back, halfway back to the village, and there was a well there. He said, he's in the well. Look at him. So the big lion, he put his head in the well, and sure enough, he saw a lion in there. What he saw was his own reflection. So the rabbit said, don't worry at him, he's very mean. He'll roar back at you. Oh yeah? Roar! And sure enough, that other lion at the bottom of the well, the reflection, roared back, the echo. So this made the lion furious, and he jumped in the well to kill the other lion, and he drowned. So this rabbit was very intelligent. So this is a good analogy. Actually, he became envious of his own self. It was only his reflection that he was afraid of, so he jumped in and killed himself. So the same position of the living entity. He's envious of his own self as being an eternal servant of God. But when one comes to devotional service, one actually begins to appreciate the true nature of the soul as that of being servant. In fact, service in Krishna consciousness is so sweet and so relishable that a devotee is willing and able to serve anything that is in relationship to Krishna. In the material world, people avoid service. But after tasting devotional service to Krishna, becoming reinstated in our original situation as servant to God, a devotee recognizes everything in relationship to God, tadiya. He also has great respect for and a desire to serve that which is in relationship to the Lord, especially a devotee of the Lord, by whose mercy we get the mercy of Krishna. One who says he's my devotee is not my devotee, but one who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he is actually my devotee. So actually we can get the mercy of Krishna. It's more accessible through the lotus feet of a Vaishnava than it is directly to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, devotees, they like to serve in any capacity, as friend and friend, temple president and bhakta, or husband and wife, whatever the case may be. That service relationship is the central theme. Therefore, as we see from this verse, because Archie's husband was an exalted devotee, she felt very secure and very happy serving him. This is something which cannot be understood by a conditioned soul. That is why last night when we spoke about service, we spoke about the woman's position as being subservient in some ways, they became very angry. But if they knew what it was like in devotional service for a woman to serve her Krishna-conscious husband, they would not talk like that. They would not think like that. Of course, service to a mundane husband is something else. Prabhupada said, if you serve a third-class person, you become 10th class. But service to an exalted Vaishnava means you get that Vaishnava's mercy and you also become exalted. So therefore, everyone in Vedic culture takes on the service mentality. No one is independent. And that is the meaning of that statement in Vedic scriptures, that a woman is never meant to be independent. That from her childhood, she is protected by her father. When she grows older, she's protected by her husband. And when the husband takes sannyas, or in the event of the death of the husband, then the woman is protected by her sons. And this is in her own interest. It's for protection. Because again, the nature of this material world is that people want to exploit. So a woman is vulnerable. By nature, she's considered, well, they say it in eloquent terms, she's the fair sex. So sometimes Vedic literature takes it a little farther, the weaker sex. But physically and even mentally, emotionally, women are more weaker than men. And thus, they're easily exploited. To give a woman independence doesn't mean to deny her freedom. It denies her freedom for spiritual life because she becomes immediately exploited by so many lusty men. So to grant independence to women means to throw them to the wolves. But they don't realize this because they themselves are also ignorant. They want sense gratification. So it's a very unfortunate situation. Therefore, Vedic culture teaches this principle of protection so that one is protected that he can practice Krishna consciousness. To not be exploited by those of material mentality, lusty mentality in the material world. Just like a king, he builds a fortress around his kingdom so his citizens can live peacefully. What is the purpose of the Great Wall? To protect his citizens. So in the same way, a woman is given protection at these different stages of her life so that she herself can practice and become successful in the real business of life, which is Krishna consciousness. So therefore, as part of that protection, a woman herself also practices chastity. Prabhupada says here in the purport that boys are trained at a young age in austerities and women are trained in austerity. So this combination of austerity on the part of the men and chastity on the part of the women makes for a very favorable atmosphere for spiritual life. Actually, when we speak strongly about these subject matters, it's not discrimination. We're not discriminating against men or discriminating against women. We're simply speaking about the science of material life. And because our real interest is Krishna, we accept these various rules and regulations. Vedic literature discusses that man is like butter and woman is like fire. Otherwise, how would things continue in this material world? One time Prabhupada was speaking very strongly about illicit sex life. So strongly that one disciple raised his hand and said, Prabhupada, it's the way you're talking, it's probably better not to have sex life at all. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is the ultimate goal. Then the devotee said, but then there would be no more people taking birth. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is the ultimate goal, back home, back to Godhead. So if you're interested in sense gratification, these principles are not very attractive. But if you're interested in going back home, back to Godhead, the little austerity that is involved in cutting down the association of men and women is within everyone's interest. So it's not discrimination, it's actually a type of protection. I'm protected so that I can peacefully sit down and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Nama Nama, Hare Hare. My mind won't be agitated. The mind has been agitated. This desire, sex desire, is actually the driving force of material life. Pumsha stridya mituni bhavan tayor mito hridaya grante moho oho giksetu satapti vitar janasi moho yam maham mameti. The attraction between male and female is a basic principle of material existence. Based on this attraction, which ties together the hearts of the male and the female, one becomes attracted to his body, to his home, to his wife, to his children, and all his paraphernalia. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of eye and mind. So this whole business of attraction to the opposite sex is the very means by which we are conditioned to material life. So the whole theme of Vedic culture is this theme of renunciation from this basic principle of material life for the higher purpose of meditating on the absolute truth, Sri Krishna. So devotee very eagerly accepts this because he wants to advance in Krishna consciousness. So boys, they practice austerity, and girls practice chastity, and that makes a very favorable atmosphere, a peaceful atmosphere for executing Krishna consciousness. Actually, I was reading recently the Ramayana, and at one point, after Sita had been taken away by Ravana, then Lord Ramachandra, he asked Lakshman to go find Sita. He said, please, go look everywhere to find my beloved Sita. But then Lakshman, he turned to Rami and said, but what does she look like? Ramachandra, you know, Lakshman is his brother, and he's been living with Sita Ram for so many years in the forest and in the kingdom in Ayodhya. So what is his brother saying, what does she look like? So Ram said, what do you mean, what does Sita look like? So very humbly, Lakshman said, my dear Lord, I've never looked above her ankles. So this is a very nice example of control of the senses. He was so, he himself was chaste, he was so austere that Lakshman had never looked in the face of another man's wife, but rather he'd only looked at the lotus feet of Mother Sita Devi. So this is actually a beautiful quality. This is something that a materialistic person may think is completely fanatic and crazy, but for a devotee, this is wonderful. This shows spiritual strength. Vachuvegam, Manashakrodavegam, being able to control the mind and the senses, that is a superior power to physical strength. One may be very powerful physically, but he's controlled by his senses. So one who can actually control his mind and senses for the higher purpose of Krishna consciousness, we can understand that person's actually superior. He's actually stronger. So if one can control the mind, that takes great spiritual power. Bala means Balarama. Lord Balaram is the source of spiritual strength. So the devotees, they pray to Lord Balaram. And the spiritual master is a representative of Lord Balaram. Please give me the strength to conquer my mind and senses and to engage in devotional service. So we can judge our advancement in that regard by how detached we are from sex life. In accordance with our detachment from the opposite sex, we can advance in Krishna consciousness. So this takes great spiritual strength to do this. So this is an attractive quality. It's very becoming. Therefore, Chanaka Pandit, he said that the beauty of a cuckoo is in her notes. The beauty of an ugly person is in his scholarship. The beauty of an ascetic is in his forgiveness. And the beauty of a woman is in her chastity. A cuckoo, it's not a particularly attractive bird, if you've seen a cuckoo. Not as attractive as a peacock, for example, or a swan. But have you ever heard a swan make a noise? That's what they sound like. Or a peacock? I know a Yojapati, my good friend in Vrindavan. He's lived in Vrindavan for many years. There's one sound that drives him nuts. Not very good, Jimus. It's a good microphone, but I can't make it. Pull out, how do they sound, peacocks? They make a funny noise sometimes. So this is peacock. They make swans, the most beautiful birds. They have beautiful feathers and they're very attractive, but they have funny noises. I mean, but a cuckoo is not a particularly, it's kind of a chubby looking little fat bird. But when they sing, it's so sweet, melt your heart. Woo! Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Peacocks there is. So the beauty of a peacock, even though it's not a particularly attractive bird, is in her sweet notes. And the beauty, even if a person's born ugly, maybe deformed, whatever, he becomes attractive if he's a scholar. If he can speak truth very eloquently, that person is attractive. People will sit down and stare at that person for hours. I think, who was that sage who was bent in eight ways? Agastya Muni. No. Angira? I think even Srila Vyasadeva was not particularly attractive. Srila Vyasadeva was not particularly attractive. But everyone is attracted to Srila Vyasadeva because of the transcendental knowledge which he is speaking. And also we see that in old age, one becomes disfigured, one becomes unattractive. But Srila Prabhupada, at least to me, he always appeared like an eternal youth in Prabhupada's association. I never thought of Prabhupada as an old man. Prabhupada was 79, 80 years of old, but Prabhupada seemed to, well, he was eternal, but he always seemed like a youth to me, like some kind of young boy. So this is the impression I got, because Prabhupada was so effulgent, and when you went on a morning walk, he'd outwalk you, outdistance you. So even in old age, a devotee is still attractive. Actually, when you come to Krishna consciousness, there's that saying in the Nectar of Devotion that, you know, when one comes to Krishna consciousness, he may have been very disheveled and dirty and untrained before, but when one comes to devotional service, he appears to be like a dancing peacock. And actually, every devotee seems attractive. We don't consider the physical characteristics of a devotee, because a devotee's real nature is this Krishna consciousness, which becomes manifest. Actually, Prabhupada said, this process is so potent that one whose body is in the mode of ignorance, that very body itself comes into the mode of goodness. The body changes. One is born into a certain mode of nature. But by practicing devotional service, the body comes into the mode of goodness. And then sutta-sattva comes in the mode of transcendence. So even if someone is, from the materialistic point of view, very ugly, if one becomes a devotee or one becomes a scholar, we would consider this from a devotional platform, that person becomes attractive. And the beauty of an ascetic is in his forgiveness. This is a rare quality. In fact, it doesn't hardly exist in conditioned souls to forgive. But an ascetic, he can actually forgive. And the beauty of a woman is in her chastity. Although women like to advertise themselves as being very much available to be exploited in our modern age, that is considered freedom. When a man actually wants to marry a woman, he doesn't want to marry the loose woman or the prostitute. They never get married. But he wants to marry the chaste woman. That is only natural. So therefore, the actual beauty of a woman is in her chastity. Such chastity in a woman is actually respected even by great demigods. Because that is also a sign of spiritual strength. If a woman can be chaste, keep her head covered, be humble and shy, and serve her husband very nicely, that's a sign of spiritual strength. Just like a brahmachari controls his senses by not associating with the opposite sex more than is necessary. So a woman, what association is there, she's shy and chaste, that also takes spiritual strength. So therefore, a chaste woman is honored. We glorify such devotees as Draupadi, Kunti, etc. Who are the most chaste women in the universe? The gopis of Vrindavan, because they're ultimately chaste to the Supreme Lord. They were so chaste of the Lord, they gave up their husbands. That's a hard one to figure out. They gave up everything for Krishna, therefore they're considered the most chaste women in the universe. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was a strict sannyasi, and we know the vows a sannyasi takes, he's always glorifying the gopis. In fact, one time, when he had a school, he was just singing the names of the gopis. So his own disciples came along and said, what, have you become mad? Why are you singing the names of the gopis? You're a devotee of Krishna. You're supposed to be singing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Nama, Nama Nama. What are you singing the names of the gopis for? So Lord Chaitanya became very angry at his disciples. He chased them with a stick outside. You rascals, you dare to disobey. So here is a strict sannyasi glorifying these devotees who are ladies. So a woman becomes actually exalted by her quality of chastity. And even great demigods, they honor such a devotee, such a person. Just like Savitri. Savitri was married to her husband, obviously. And she knew, actually, before Savitri married her husband, she was told by a great sage that he would not live very long. But still, the attraction was there, so she married him. And then, very early, he died. Yamaraj came to take him away. So she was childless at that time. So as Yamaraj was taking her husband to the kingdom of death, or judgment, she followed behind, because she had mystic power. So she said, what are you doing? Yamaraj said, I'm taking your husband. She said, but how can you take my husband? I'm childless, I have no children yet. So Yamaraj turned around, he said, all right, I'm going to take your husband, I'll leave you one blessing, one boon. And she said, what is that boon? So Yamaraj said, I bless you that you'll have one very nice son. Goodbye. And he took off. So she continued to follow. She said, my dear Yamaraj, I want to point out to you that I'm a chaste woman, follower of Vedic principles. I cannot have a child by anyone else but my husband. So you must give my husband back. So Yamaraj said, ah, tricked, all right. So because of the chastity of Savitri, he gave back her husband. Her husband came back to life. So actually a chaste woman can save her husband. Actually a chaste woman is described in Bhagavatam to be like the fortress. There's many verses which speak strongly against the materialistic mentality of men and women. But when that mentality is Krishna conscious, it's glorified. So therefore, forget which canto, the chapter of King Puranjan, the wife is actually glorified, the chaste wife, because she's considered to be the commander of the fort. She's the better half of the man's body, because she helps the husband perform different Vedic rituals, thereby enabling him to become purified and go back home, back to God. And she's considered the better half. And she's like the commander of the fort, because when the senses are agitated, one can take shelter in the wife. Not that he exploits the wife, but he has a wife. His mind becomes peaceful. He doesn't think of so many different women and pollute young girls in society, Prabhupada said, thereby become degraded and fall down deeper and deeper into an entanglement of material life. So a chaste wife is glorified like that. She's like the commander, better half of a man's body. But they have to earn that glorification by actually being chaste. So nowadays that chastity is simply not respected at all. Because everything is topsy-turvy. And Prabhupada himself, he saw this in his own times, coming up. Once Prabhupada was riding on a train, and there was a young village girl there, and she had her face covered. Her head was covered and her face was covered. So there was a city girl who was trained in a different way. She was making fun of that village girl, pulling her veil like that and making some, what is this? This is old-fashioned what you're doing. This is new fashion. She's wearing a mini skirt and, you know, why don't you be more modern? She kept teasing the young girl. So finally the village girl, she slapped the city girl very hard. And all the people in the train, this is Vedic culture. So this chastity to a devotee husband is very glorious. Prabhupada actually said that the woman, she shares in the advancement of her spiritual advancement automatically. This is the benefit from serving a devotee husband. That perhaps even if the woman is not making so much advancement herself, she shares the same advancement as her husband. Another story Prabhupada told was that once he was going along the road, he saw a very beautiful young girl. I think she was around 16 or 17. But her husband had been disfigured in a fire in some accident. His whole face was melted and he was all hunched over and he looked very horrible. But Prabhupada noticed that young girl, though very beautiful and attractive, she probably could have had any other man as her husband that she desired. But because Vedic culture meant no divorce, there's no such thing as divorce in Vedic culture. Rather, try to cooperate in Krishna consciousness. She stayed with her husband, even though he was disfigured and, you know, scarred and so forth. She didn't leave him, but rather she stayed with him. So, of course, so this verse is explaining that the woman should serve her husband in that mentality. And that's very favorable for a peaceful marriage, because, of course, in this material world, there's no such thing as perfect relationship until we become completely Krishna conscious. So we'll see sometimes that in marriage, there's sometimes some differences. The differences are there. So Prabhupada explained one time in a lecture that therefore, because the differences are there, in order to make the marriage peaceful, therefore the wife, she should imbibe the mentality of her husband. It's not that you can have two masters. Too many cooks spoil the pot. Too many sannyasis spoil the yajna. So if, you know, unless this mentality of becoming subservient is there, then the marriage will always be disturbed. So if the husband is a devotee and Krishna conscious, then it's the duty of the wife to imbibe the mentality of her husband. And Chanakapanda says, therefore, that the goddess of fortune comes to that place where fools are not worshipped, where grains are carefully stored, and where there are no quarrels between husband and wife. He also says that the funeral ceremony of a sage who died in the forest, a fight between two goats, a thunderclap in the morning, and a quarrel between husband and wife, all begin in grand style, but the outcome is insignificant. At least it's supposed to be like this. So by cultivating this mentality of chastity on the part of the ladies and austerity on the part of the men, and living a proper Krishna-conscious household or life of service, then spiritual advancement is there. And then eventually, after the children are grown up, the men and the women, they take vanaprastha, they go to the forest, and still the woman continues to serve her husband. And then at a later stage, after traveling in the forest for some time, so that, therefore, successful married life is when the woman becomes trained as a first-class devotee, and the husband, because of his responsibility in taking proper care of his wife, he's become Krishna conscious. He's done his responsibility. He has not neglected his duties. Both of them have pleased the Supreme Lord by their service. Therefore, the result is that they become detached and attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So sannyas, although it is a cutting, it's like cutting the fingernails. It's also part of the body. When you cut the little part of the top of your finger here, ooh, it's very painful. But you've cut the fingernail, which is also part of the body. It's considered part of the body. The fingernail is part of the body. It's painless. So actually, successful grihastha life is that when there's separation for the higher purpose of preaching Krishna consciousness, and it's not painful. Every woman is thinking that day when her husband takes sannyas, how painful it's going to be. But actually, if the woman is trained and elevated by the husband, and together they advance nicely in Krishna consciousness, it's natural. Just like skin falls off from the body, fingernails are cut from the body. That's what sannyas is. So we have nothing to fear in Krishna consciousness. Actually, nothing to fear. The only thing we have to fear is that Prabhupada said every woman is too much attached to her husband, and every husband is too much attached to his wife. So therefore, we have to follow strictly these rules, and then we'll see that great admiration and respect that comes as a result of having a devotee husband and a devotee wife. They don't understand, but there's a great respect which comes about as a result of serving each other on the devotional platform. And therefore, towards the later years of life, the husband takes sannyas to preach, the wife goes, she also becomes a preacher. Just like Jadarani. Her husband took sannyas very early. So that's Varup Maharaj. But it's not that she became retired, a little old widow, you know, living in the back part of the altar. It's also glorious. Any step forward in Krishna consciousness, however painful it may seem to be, if it's done under the direction of higher authority and the motivation is Krishna, it's always auspicious, no matter what it is. So by chance or good fortune, Prabhupada asked Sasarupa Maharaj to take sannyas. Jadarani was a young girl, one of the most qualified devotees in our society. But being a very good devotee, she didn't lament. And what now? She's one of the biggest preachers in Krishna consciousness. She gives many of the Bhagavatam classes in New York. In fact, I've seen four or five sannyasis sitting, hearing Mother Jadarani lecture. And this year when we were in the middle, in Eastern Europe, we weren't able to go to Czechoslovakia, and there was no need to go because she was there preaching. We heard that, you know, anyway, different sannyasis went there and preached all over. And then she came with her group of, I think it's called some type of bhajan group. They went and did the same towns again. And when the devotees asked who they wanted to come back, the people, they all said Mother Jadarani. They liked her lectures the best. They liked her kirtans the best. And they felt that she was the most spiritually advanced. So she's a very nice devotee. So this is Krishna consciousness. So we have nothing to fear by, you know, renouncing. Renouncing means what? We renounce what is not favorable in Krishna consciousness. And if Krishna takes anything away from his devotee, it's to be understood he's taking it away to give him something higher. Therefore, we don't resist this mood of renunciation. Sex desire is very strong in the heart. Until one becomes an absolute Paramahansa, pure devotee of the Lord, the attraction is still there. But we don't fear giving up that which appears to be most dear to us, because that's what's most dear to those with materialistic mentality. We're praying to the Lord, remove that which may appear to be very dear to me. Just tear it from my heart, my dear Lord Nisringadev. You are inside and outside and you are everywhere. Tear from this heart this desire, which is actually an obstacle to my pure devotional service to you. Although this appears to be dear to me, I know that you are Prandanahe. You are the Lord of my life. So therefore, don't let my offerings to you be blemished with this material desire in my heart. Please, take it and remove it. Therefore, Prabhupada said, when one is sufficiently spiritually advanced, the Lord's mercy is he reveals all of one's material attachments at once, so that one can be finished with them forever. But that only happens at a very advanced stage, because if we saw what was actually in our heart, so gradually, gradually. But we should not be afraid of this principle of renunciation from anything which is not favorable to devotional service. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shikshartam eke purusha parana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shariradi Kripam Viryastam Aham Bhavaya. That we offer obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has appeared in this age as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us his own devotional service, real knowledge, and vairagya vidya, detachment from anything which does not foster Krishna consciousness. So Vedic culture is so nice that a gradual detachment is there. Gradually we're becoming detached from these principles of our attachment to this material world, and grihastha life serves that purpose. But we don't think that successful grihastha life means that, you know, we retire to Mayapur and we have a little bhajan kutya there, and with our wife, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, how you doing, Prabhu? Okay, Hare Rama. That's, you know, and we've got enough money to live secure and go to the doctor and prolong our life a little bit longer. We don't consider that the success. The success is at one point, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Good luck, Hare Bol. Everyone should wish that upon, the wife should wish that upon her husband, the husband should wish that upon her wife, not be afraid of it. Because that means more service for Guru and Gauranga, that's exalted. So it may be some distance away. That's it, but we're working ultimately towards that goal. So it's also mentioned here that although Queen Archie became very thin from living in the forest according to regular principles, she was not unhappy, for she was enjoying the honor of serving her great husband. So this is another important point. This verse also implies, Prabhupada's purport also implies, that any austerities we undergo on behalf of our spiritual authority, we will not feel to be a burden. That is the real nature of service to spiritual authority. That it doesn't, we don't consider it to be a burden. Whereas in material life, when you serve someone and take on a responsibility, it becomes a heavy burden which you have to carry. But in Krishna consciousness, when we serve someone and take up service on their behalf, it becomes like a burden of love. So we enjoy it. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed to the Lord, difficulties encountered on your behalf in the execution of my service, my Lord, will be my greatest pleasure. Be my greatest pleasure. So any austerities that we have to undergo on behalf of Guru and Gauranga, we willingly accept. We take great pleasure in that. Just like Srila Prabhupada has asked us to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. It's a very difficult thing. To go on Padayatra and travel and live in different places and take cold bucket showers, or cold baths with a bucket, etc. I was looking outside the window where I was taking my hot shower. I was thinking, wait a minute, I should be out there with the buckets. Anyway, I couldn't get the thing to work, so it was a cold shower. But this is all very difficult. But we know that it pleases Srila Prabhupada that we're out here undergoing these austerities and preaching Krishna consciousness, so that cold bath is very relishable. And that austerity that we have to undergo, walking in the hot sun and traveling and living in difficult situations, we don't consider that difficult. We consider it a pleasure to do that for Srila Prabhupada. So both the spiritual master and the disciple sacrifice for each other, and this loving relationship becomes very sweet. Actually, both the spiritual master and the disciple sacrifice for each other. And that is the real meaning of love. We sacrifice, Prabhupada said, how is it that a pure devotee has been able to sacrifice everything in this world because of his love for the Supreme Lord? That's how powerful is love for the Supreme Lord, that we can sacrifice everything in this world is insignificant because we've tasted that higher love of Krishna consciousness. So that is the meaning of love. We sacrifice for each other's interests, and then the relationship becomes very sweet. So we see this is also Archie, actually her husband is like her spiritual master. The husband is one of the spiritual masters because he's protecting his wife and he's training her in Krishna consciousness. He's like a spiritual master. So this is the relationship between spiritual master and disciple. That the spiritual master, he also sacrifices for his disciple. He has to take the karma. That is not a sacrifice. He has to suffer for his disciple. But he's willing to do that when he sees that his disciple is eager to advance in Krishna consciousness. So spiritual master is sacrifice. He's taking a burden, training that disciple, worrying about that disciple, giving good instruction, caring, that is there. It's like a burden. But the joy, the greatest joy of a Vaishnava is to see someone else advancing in Krishna consciousness. That's our highest pleasure. Our pleasure is not just enjoying Krishna consciousness ourselves. The real pleasure of a Vaishnava, the real pleasure, his pleasure is in seeing others advance in Krishna consciousness. So he'll go out on the streets and go through hell if he can see that some people are taking a book or purchasing an item in Krishna consciousness and making spiritual advancement. That's his happiness. He can sit back and be very pleased with that. So Guru is also happy to take on the burden of having a disciple. He'll sacrifice. And the disciple seeing the spiritual master sacrificing for him, that increases his mood of surrender to Krishna. So the disciple also sacrifices his material attachments. And he sacrifices everything on behalf of spiritual master to go out and please the spiritual master by begging, or as we say, preaching Krishna consciousness. So this is real love. Just like Archie is very happy, although she's undergoing difficulty, she's not unhappy because she's enjoying the honor of serving her great husband. That is real love. That is the love, the real love that a husband and wife can experience, sacrificing for each other's interest in Krishna consciousness. So we also experience that in Krishna consciousness between spiritual master and disciple, sacrificing for each other's pleasure in devotional service. And this way we begin to understand what real sacrifice means, what it really means to have a loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We cannot approach Krishna directly, but we can experience that relationship through our association with devotees and the spiritual master. We get a little taste of what it's like to be with Krishna by being with Krishna's devotees. That's the beauty of devotional service. Anyway, we'll end there. Are there any questions or comments? Heaps? Okay. You practice and you pray for that compassion to manifest in your heart, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed, when will that day come when my compassion for all fallen souls will manifest, and with a lowly heart I'll go out to preach the divine command. So the more that we actually begin to appreciate Krishna consciousness and enjoy Krishna consciousness, to that degree we'll see that people are suffering in the material world. So it will come naturally. If you chant, take prasad, live in the association of devotees, etc., you'll experience the higher taste of devotional service. It will become very clear to you how people are struggling in the material world. And then you'll naturally, only the most selfish person can stand by why other people are suffering. So vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripasimdavevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevi namo namaha. Devotee becomes very compassionate because he alone has the real taste of happiness, and he sees people who are suffering. So he gives that to them and he sees them becoming happy. So that's a natural result of devotional service. Yes?
Devotee is playing the role of husband, rather than the intelligence of, not according to the wife's perception, but other devotees' perception. What is the role in the new? You are asking how far does the wife follow this new, to what's the point?
If the husband's not Krishna conscious? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, just following the mood of the husband, if it was incorrect, maybe not to your perception, could you
Well, then we should ascertain if he's actually off or not. Because somebody's wrong, either the wife or the other devotees. And if the husband is off, he should be corrected. In other words, through Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, we should see where one is situated. And if there's need for correction, then it should be, someone should be corrected. But if the husband is nicely situated in Krishna consciousness, then he should be followed. If the husband's a rascal, then he shouldn't be followed. Sometimes what?
Because of the service that we're given, particularly if we go out and sometimes we have to be sort of aggressive and pushing, you know, different qualities in order to, you know, engage the materialist and Christian service. So sometimes it's actually quite difficult to be doing that all day and come home and be. So, how much
is that right, Carlos? What should I say?
Should we worry about that and try and schizophrenic?
Well, Prabhupada said that one time the ladies actually came to Prabhupada. Of course, it's a little bit different circumstance. They came to Prabhupada and they said that we're supposed to be very shy and chaste, but when we go on Sankirtan, if we're, you know, we're very meek and humble like that, then we can't distribute any books. So Prabhupada, he coined that phrase. He said you should be like a lamb at home and a lion on the chase. But it doesn't mean that when a woman goes out as a lion on the chase that she gives up her chastity. She just becomes enthusiastic for preaching Krishna. Her chastity is to the principles of Krishna consciousness. Chastity isn't, we don't necessarily mean chastity means like this, you know, all the time. That may be appropriate under certain circumstances. But chastity may also mean getting out there and being fired up and, you know, distributing and collecting and going on. And that's also chaste to the instruction of Krishna. If one is very much like this all day, hiding in one's room. So no man will see, you know, that I'm so chaste that no man has seen me today, you know. That's not as chaste as a woman, you know, having to put on appropriate civilian dress, you know, I mean appropriate dress, and going out and, you know, meeting people and engaging in Krishna. That's more chaste to the instructions of Krishna. Krishna Varnan Tusha Krishna Shangopang Vishaparshadam, to preach Krishna consciousness. So I'd say we could say the same thing applies at home, that, you know, what does chastity mean in relationship with the husband? Chastity means to be chaste to the instructions of the spiritual master. And, you know, one's relationship at home may also be very fired up. Maybe the husband and the wife enjoy, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness together, serving the deity, and they're both very fired up. They're both talking, you know, we can't get a word in edgewise. That's chaste. But, you know, it's not chaste if they disagree about the color of the stove they're going to buy, and they argue. In that case, the woman should just say, all right, get a green one if you want a green one. Yeah. That's what I mean by that. In other words, somebody's got to win the argument. Who cares if it's green, yellow, or blue? But according to our conditioning, we want green, yellow, or blue. So the woman should take the second position. All right, get a green one. I wanted a red one. All right. But as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned, they can both be very fired up and, you know, preaching, like you and Kalas. Right, Kalas? That'll be $10, please. Well, there's a Bengali proverb that we should eat according to our own taste, but dress according to the taste of others. So we should be conscious of how others see us, because actually it's very difficult for us to see ourselves objectively. That's the nature. We all think that we're the greatest devotees. So. Nature of the conditioned soul. So we should be willing to hear from other devotees. Of course, you know, we can't change overnight, and we can't change our nature. But we should also, we should hear specifically from those who are responsible for us, who know us, like husband or guru or temple president, those who are actually qualified to see. Yes, I'll be another $10. Husband, temple president, guru. That'd be $20. In other words, instruction should be given by those who are qualified to give instruction. Chanaka Pandit says that we should only chastise disciples and sons, because that type of chastising can be accepted, and it will be accepted. So we should approach those persons, or listen to those persons who are actually qualified to give us instruction, who can actually see very Krishna consciously where we're at in devotional service and give us practical advice about the negative and positive aspects of our service. We shouldn't become discouraged because we hear a rumor. Did you hear that such and such heard from such and such, heard from such and such 3 years ago that you did this? Oh no! You just go on for days, you know. I'm not taking it to exaggeration, but you know, sometimes we hear something from somebody and we become completely discouraged. So, you know, we should constantly be clarifying where we're at in devotional service by asking our authorities, you know, is there anything I can improve on? I mean, I know even one of my best friends in Krishna consciousness, Shivaram Maharaj, he was GBC chairman, sannyasi, in charge of Bhaktivedanta Manor. He's got about 60 disciples, you know. He's got a few godmothers, and he sits down with his godmothers and says, okay, I don't want to hear all the glorification anymore, you know. He sends his disciples out of the room. He sits down with his godmothers. He says, okay, you see anything I need to work on? Yeah, I got a list here, Maharaj. You know, I didn't like the way you're, you know. So everybody has to hear, but we should hear from appropriate persons. Constructive criticism. The tendency of the conditioned soul is to criticize in order to elevate himself above others. So that's another meaning of prajalpa. Sometimes in devotional service, you know, the conditioned nature is to offer some criticism just so that I'll feel better. So we should avoid that type of criticism, but we should be willing to hear constructive criticism. We need to hear constructive criticism. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that, or his disciples said, they appreciated more the chastisement of their Guru Maharaj than they did his blessings. They were more eager for that. Any other questions? Yes?
You were saying that Srila Prabhupada said not having children for a sex life is the best life, because then you want to go back to Godhead. How important is the service of having children?
That was an instruction giving according to time and circumstance. Actually, Prabhupada was making a spiritual joke, I would say. He certainly doesn't expect that the devotees would stop having children. I mean, only certain individuals can actually renounce. That's sannyas, to renounce that altogether. Therefore, we see that we don't have many sannyasis. But that was actually probably just taking light of a particular moment, I would say. But actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said he would have sex life 1,000 times if he could ensure that all those children would become Krishna conscious. So actually, householders are encouraged to have children. Generally, householders are encouraged to have children, because although we don't want varnasankara, we don't want unwanted children, we welcome Krishna conscious children. The children are the future of this movement. So we welcome children, these great souls who come into. If we didn't welcome children into this movement, what would be our situation? Let's say we don't make it this time. Then where are we going to take birth? What's our hope? If we don't make it, then what's the hope? There has to be some nice grihastha couple. You know, you leave the Buddha, sorry, there's no vacancies, Prabhu. What do you mean? Well, everybody's being a real tayagi this year, you know. Better go do something else for a few centuries and come back, you know. The best birth is like Bhava and Kamalaya. I was just reading yesterday, thinking, boy, When I was born, I think my mother was listening to Beethoven or something, you know. A lot of kids are conceived on rock and roll, and when they first come out, there's a cloud of marijuana there, and, you know. So unfortunate from the very beginning. Oh, you coochie little cutie little body. Here's some sense gratitude. But this child was born, I mean, there were so many things they did. When it was born, and it was placed on a banana leaf to represent detachment or something from the material world, and then they put ghee on his tongue, and chanted Hare Krishna. Even the nurse was chanting Hare Krishna. I think Baba got tired, he fell asleep or something. And the nurse started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Suspicious. I remember when my son was born, Gorshakti. Of course, I was on Chalak Sangirtan. I didn't get the news till 6 weeks later. I didn't come back for 3 months. When I came back, it was this squiggly little thing. But I was told that when he was born, the pain was so difficult that his mother couldn't chant. But she'd instructed the nurse, the midwife, to chant. So the midwife, you know, she followed the instruction. She had a little piece of paper. She couldn't get the mantra right at first. You know. The kid's coming out. Wait a minute. Hold on. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. But she was so, she said that birth was so, she said she used the word auspicious herself, that she never stopped chanting Hare Krishna after that. And to this day, that nurse was complete sudra, who lived in a very sudra part of Paris and just was just a low woman. Because of that experience of chanting Hare Krishna under such circumstances, she continued to chant Hare Krishna, at least till I left France some years ago. She still came to the temple, this midwife. She'd come to the program. She said, every time she'd see me, she said, I never forget when your boy was born. It was so amazing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. So, you know, if a child is born under such circumstances, it's so auspicious. So we need, actually, that Grihastha should think of it like this, that it's also a burden to raise children, but to raise, if they become great Vaishnava devotees, what could be more honorable for a mother? What could be more glorious for a mother to have a Krishna-conscious husband and a Krishna-conscious children? Is she not going to feel protected? Of course she'll feel protected under such circumstances. She'll feel enlightened. She'll have so much association her whole life. Those kids whom she raised will be indebted to her, so she'll always be surrounded by devotees. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanandi.